It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's episode 178 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week you have the chance to help the Torso Bear series of comics and its creator, Brett Urin. He's back again to talk about his new Kickstarter campaign, which will be ending in early June, so we don't have a lot of time to be sure and keep this book going because it's a wonderfully creative series. Brett and I talk about how the book came to be, what it's actually about, and what kinds of things we might find in the future from this series. We talk about how he got his creative team together and what kinds of things we might see in the future from him. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show.
It is nighttime in Toy World, and all is quiet. One little bear is still awake and so nervous that his stuffing is in knots. He notices you and leaps back in surprise. He says,
"Oh, thank you, Geppetto. I'm Detective Ruxby Bear of Toyburg PD. I don't know how you got in here, but you have to help me."
The scared toy beckons you closer.
"I was working on a case in Toyburg City that got me too close to the mayor, so I've been framed and put here."
Ruxby jumps back a little.
"You don't know where this is?"
Our fuzzy friend laughs nervously.
"This is the corner, Toy World's most scariest prison, filled with killers, fanatics, and old villains of the Saturday morning wars."
Realizing that he doesn't have long here before the guards find him, Ruxby tells you,
"There's a group of investigators back in Toyburg who are collecting stories to expose the corrupt, celebrate the righteous, and get me out of here. Tales of the falsely accused and executed. Tales of old villains being used by cops to do their dirty work. And I'm sure that the last bad toy I caught, the Switcher, will lead me to the copycat that has been working in secret for months. I can't do anything from in here, but you can."
Our tiny furry friend takes out a notebook and bright button and pleads with you.
"Please, get my notes to the outside and to my friends. Help them raise the buttons to get the truth out in Toy World and that sick plaything behind bars. My friends have even promised to strike a deal with whoever wants to sell our yarns in their stores. For your buttons, my friends will send books, posters, shirts, and other works from their collections to help bring the real Toyburg out into the rays of Mr. Sun."
As he slips off to find his cell again, Ruxby says with a shake in his voice,
"Last year might have put steel in my stuffing, but please hurry and help prove my innocence before I get put on the step. I've heard it changes a toy forever."
I want to welcome back to the podcast Brett Urin, the creator of Torso Bear, among other good things, and has got a nice Kickstarter program to continue on that great little character. So how are you doing today, Brett?
I'm doing fine, Wayne. Thank you very much for having me back on the show. It's a pleasure to catch up again.
Oh, it's good to talk with you as always. Now, as I mentioned, you've got a Kickstarter going on with Torso Bear, and you did a first Kickstarter, and that was a successful one, and you brought Torso Bear Volume 1 out. So now you're in the process of Volume 2.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you go ahead and give us a basic idea what the story of Torso Bear is?
Well, the first volume really was kind of like evolved out of a short story where we're trying to do something that was gritty and dark as modern comics are, but without any of the sexualization that a lot of characters go through now, or, you know, a lot of the unnecessary blood and gore. Someone was talking to me the other day at Free Comic Book Day about how they wondered how they were going to introduce their kid to Batman, because that might be a bit too harsh for kids now. So I wanted to sort of like walk that line, see how far you could take it with something that's cute and fluffy and otherwise. The short story in a digital anthology out of Norway did really well. And judging by that feedback, I decided to see how clearly we could take it again. But I just had a two-year-old little girl and I didn't have the time to do a whole graphic novel myself. And that's how the anthology idea was born, really.
Mm-hmm. Now, Torso Bear is who? Who is that character?
Torso Bear is not a character. It's sort of a literal mashing of the two concepts together in that there is a Black Dahlia style of murders going on. But you've got bears and toys and it's the last place you would expect to see that sort of really nasty serial murder happening is in an otherwise bright and breezy city of toys and candy and dolls.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's for sure. We all expect everything to go well in those kinds of universes. So when it doesn't go there, of course, that's a great thing because you're exploring areas that we haven't gone before.
So, well, that was the idea, really, to try and find something new, some way of subverting sort of like two genres at once. And that was a rare thing among me. It wasn't a subconscious exploration or anything. It was trying to be directly tackling a certain idea. Mm-hmm. In that you could take these cute characters and you could do awful things with them without having any actually R-rated or mature theme represented in it, you know. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the other writers and artists seemed to pick up on that quite rapidly. There was something about that that they just sort of clicked into, especially with so many of people of our age being coming from the 80s era with so many action toys and the Care Bears and things like that. There were so many toy brands that were ingrained in them that they could pick from.
Mm-hmm. Which is pretty cool because I like to go where I haven't been before. I like to read things I haven't read before. You know, because so often, like superhero books, as much as I love them and I buy them every month, it's well-trod ground. You know, we know what's going to happen. Batman's got to be, by the end of the issue, back where he started so that somebody else can write if that needs to happen.
Absolutely. I mean, even those huge arcs like Grant Morrison's Batman Through Time that he did with his Puritan Batman and the Caveman Batman, you obviously always know that's going to return back to type, as fun as that exploration is. So even Grant Morrison's writings for DC and such like, you know, you tend to know more or less where they're going to end up.
Well, I don't think I'm spoiling it for anybody, but Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo in the latest Batman, number 40, basically killed both him and the Joker. And, of course, they asked him in an interview, does this mean he's never going to come back? And they went, well, if I put a character like that, we kill him off, and DC loses all that money, not likely.
Yeah, no, it's not likely. Which is why, perhaps, I feel, certainly, that some of the more refreshing titles I've read recently come out of a system where you don't necessarily have that, because the money's not tied to a huge franchise character. You can step outside those bounds. You don't have to return to type every time.
Which is great. That's a very different kind of reading for those of us who are used to the monthly comics. It's nice to see something that actually has a beginning, a middle, and something of an end, which is what your books have done. You have different little stories, but they don't necessarily always end exactly, you know, in everyone. But a lot of it has to do with us coming to some sort of a conclusion, which for me is just like so satisfying. I never get a conclusion. I mean, X-Men went on for decades and there's still nothing of a conclusion going on. So you're doing a great service for us because we get to actually read something end or conclude on some level. It's just really
interesting. We certainly enjoy having something that's anyway, each little story is a precious sort of little nugget that's contained into itself, and it's part of a larger whole, but you get to try out an idea, take it to its conclusion and take it off there. It is a satisfying way to write. I won't say that some of the other people that are involved haven't got superhero stories within them. I think there's definitely room for both out there. They both need each other.
I hope so, because, you know, when a reader, especially somebody like me, likes variety. I like to see something I haven't, like I said, that I haven't seen before. And so for me, superhero books, the ones that I enjoy the most are the ones that are doing different things with them.
What's your favorite one?
It's still Batman. Mr. Snyder and Mr. Capullo. You know, Batman's always been my favorite character from when I was a little kid. And so even though we're now, and of course, this is not spoiling anything because the Free Comic Book Day book came out.
Yeah.
We're going to have Jim Gordon in this bat armor as Batman for a while. And you know what? I'm kind of interested to see what he's going to do with that. You know?
Well, this is the thing about returning to type and having these long run franchise characters is that unlike your fairly, by comparison, one and done indie books, it amazes me the amount of different ideas, and there's almost always some new angle that someone comes out with on these long franchise books to sort of turn it on its head, and it never ceases to amaze what people come up with.
Mm-hmm. Well, you turn everything on its head just amongst your own stuff. In the first volume, how many stories do you have, separate stories, in Torso Bear Volume 1?
There were sort of four main Ruxby stories following his first year through the Toyburg Police, and then outside of that was eight short one-and-done explorations of other characters. I mean, Cy Deffen's amazing ex-He-Man villain action figure, Snaplock with his own PI angle, just a guy trying to clear his name, balancing that out against a toy soldier just defending his store from a robbery by two bears. You can go from really mundane street crime things to some really strange places.
Mm-hmm. Which is good. Now, Ruxby, of course, is Ruxby Bear, who is a cop. And the place that a lot of this takes place is in Toyburg, they call it, which I like, because that gives us, you know, everything should be nice and fluffy and happy. But instead, you've got all this wild and wonderful things going on that just surprises me from page to page. I really love that.
It surprises me as much as anyone else as well, because the writers, once you give them the formula, the background as to where you set this story in this amalgam of cartoon and toy-branded world that's cobbled together out of play sets and things. People, again, we were saying earlier, they'd find all these amazing angles that I would never have been able to think of myself.
It's funny because David Peterson does kind of the same thing with his Mouse Guard stuff. He does a series called Legends of the Guard, and what happens is other people get to play in his sandbox. And he often says that he's always surprised by the kinds of things that they provide in his world, because he would never have thought of them himself.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a certain richness to be had out of that. And think of it almost like you have the writer's room for a show like The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. And maybe part of its longevity is because you've always got so many writers coming in to take part in it. Mm-hmm. I think even Mouse Guard recently had somebody I knew from online, either Eric Esquivel or Fabian Rangel, do a story on it as well. Mm-hmm. So it's not just from established places that he takes it either. He looks for whoever's stuff he likes, mm-hmm. it seems to be.
Which is great. You give those people some exposure. Because like one of the people who's going to do an issue four is Aaron Connolly, who's a local person around where I live. And he was named like one of the promising up-and-coming person. You know, he didn't expect he was going to win the award. Can't remember where that was presented, but he went to bed that night. When he woke up in the morning, all of a sudden his email box was full of emails from people congratulating him, and he thought for sure this other person was going to win. And so he was shocked. And he's going to be in issue four, and I just think that's kind of a neat thing. I love it when something blossoms that people don't expect, like J.K. Rowling about the Harry Potter stuff. She turned it to I don't know how many publishers, and then they all rejected it, except for Scholastic, which finally took it on. She was so poor, she didn't have enough money to be able to get it Xeroxed. They wanted two copies. She had to manually retype the whole script to be able to turn in two copies.
And, wow.
And now she's the richest woman in the world. And so I love that kind of stuff. I love it when
Everybody is like, you know, even the stories behind the stories are great stories.
Oh, wonderful stuff.
When you have stuff like that. So I'd heard the bit about J.K. Rowling where it wasn't down to the Scholastic publisher, but he read a chapter to his little girl or little boy, and they loved it so much they decided to give it a run as well. And that seemed incredibly fitting that, down to it, you know, children's favorite story was, in fact, selected by a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so fascinating to me. I love those kinds of things. Now, as far as children dealing with your stuff, you said that sometimes, because it's a grimmer and grittier place, have you gotten response from parents and stuff like that, as far as the Torso Bear series goes?
Well, certainly at conventions, I often get asked, what level do you think it is? And you know, just thinking about it and discussing Harry Potter and things like even Toy Story with toys constructed out of various bits in the bully kid's other house, mm-hmm. there's a lot of scary and gritty stuff in a lot of kids' films that maybe necessarily parents don't pick up on to begin with or don't think about clearly. I mean, certainly I've had questions about it, but once the book has been bought, I haven't had any emails back, thank the Lord. So I think we pitched it at about the right level.
Great. Great. Now, the first volume is called Torso Bear Yarns from Toyburg, and it came out last year and got very well reviewed, which, because I was one of them that really liked it, and we got to talk about it last year. And now it's available on Comixology, which is very good, because I think now digital comics are starting to rise up. I also understand that it's also available in print from the Comixy store.
Yeah, yeah. That's some extra stock we had in after the Kickstarter that's still available to buy in print. Certainly, if we sell out, we'll think about doing another run. But the Comixology thing, with their submit program, they really have opened the doors to a lot of other people to have a go on the same playing field as the big guys. I think it's a fantastic service.
Such a smart move, because I always like to say that I don't know how many good stories we lost because Kickstarter wasn't around to help people be able to fund and do their books and tell the good stories. I worry about that quite a lot. But, you know, with Comixology, and when you're being able now to approach a whole new audience in the digital format, and so it's a great thing, and also comics and stuff. Now, Comixology, of course, is available in the U.S. If somebody in the U.S. wants to be able to get the print version, they still go through Comixy?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can still order from online. I mean, the shipping might be a little bit more, but, anybody can get it from anywhere.
Oh, good, good. And also, of course, the UK, which is, where you are and you're writing from, that's available there and stuff, too. Do you get a lot of response when you go to conventions? I'm just kind of curious as far as, do you get a lot of the families coming up and talking to you about it after they've read it?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, it's certainly a draw for kids. What with the characters and everything at an angle. And I think because an awful lot of guys, certainly at the conventions I'm attending, are doing a lot more teen to adult themed books, there doesn't seem to be an awful lot of all ages or age appropriate titles at these shows. But obviously, we've been talking about, and you in particular, about loving Batman as a kid. And there doesn't seem to be an awful lot of people in the indie realm perhaps sometimes making enough things for kids, or at least stuff that can be enjoyed by everybody. And it's definitely important.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. When you go to like New Comic Book Day or Free Comic Book Day, you really have to appeal to everybody. And there's a lot of books that are coming out for kids and stuff like that. But, the funny part of it is it's the adults who like to sit down and read them, I've noticed. It's the kids, they're okay with it, but the adults are the ones that really like it because it kind of takes them back to their childhood when comics were more like that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure that's nostalgia. That's your people just enjoying things. You don't necessarily have to have anything particularly adult in something to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what people are into. I mean, it's difficult to pry it apart because there is certainly a lot of nostalgia in the media for properties that are either being rebooted or revisited from a certain era. Maybe it was the 80s or 90s.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. So let's move on to your current Kickstarter project, which started on Free Comic Book Day, which was the 2nd of May.
Yeah.
From what I understand, Volume 2 is called All Stitched Up. Do you want to talk about what Volume 2's theme is?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the first book was very much about taking on damage or facing up to how harsh the real world can be. So Ruxby had his awakening in that. Now that he's more centered in how harsh life can be, it's all about consequences and how you deal with that knowledge and that sort of maturity after that. Where it takes him, unfortunately, in this book is into a toy prison at the very edge of the toy world outside Toyburg called The Corner.
See, I find that really interesting because when you're a kid, how often do you say, you better behave, you're going to go stand in the corner?
That's exactly it, yeah. I mean, there's a couple of stories coming up in that where we deal with their version of solitary as well, which is known as the step. You go and sit on the step.
Wow.
And trying to subvert those childhood things by putting a mean spin on them, or perhaps suggesting that whoever makes up the toy world is very childlike in their worldview. Mm-hmm. And again, that sort of idea of consequences go through as each of the characters and the other shorts as well try to deal with the outcomes of their choices.
Mm-hmm. Now, in a news release you sent out, I got a kick to read some of the titles of the short stories and the people who were working on them. And one of my very favorites is called Goodbye Kitty, which, of course, everyone knows, Hello Kitty. So I'm going to be fascinated to see how that goes. Do you have any explanation or a basic outline of what that story's about?
I can give you sort of a basic on it. And because the character actually turned up in a pinup for the last book, I really, really wanted fellow UK writer Gráinne McEntee to put one of her stories in the book. We'd sort of collaborated on a couple of things and attended many conventions with her and her partner, Matt, who write and draw the book Apes and Capes. She didn't have the time, unfortunately, to write a full piece. So for volume one, she just did this one paneled story about Hello Kitty that had obviously taken a car on a joyride and then drove it over the pier to avoid the police. And it stuck with me so much that when Volume 2 came around, I thought, you've got to do something with Goodbye Kitty. Come on. It's too genius of an idea to not do something more with it. So she ends up as being a kind of fairly femme fatale character, being interrogated for crimes she may or may not have committed by the Toyburg police. I think I ought to leave it there, but she's definitely a tough kitty to crack.
Very good. I also like the title of one of the cult of the collector. And those of us who assemble collections of one form or another, that's probably going to be something that's going to speak to us, I would imagine.
Yeah, again, that's a slight sort of subversion. It refers to that, to collectors, but it also refers to the story in Volume 1. It's sort of a continuation of Glenn Moran's character, Stretcho, who was a sort of Stretch Armstrong wrestler doll who was picked up by what he assumes is another worldly entity and shown sort of a collection of toys in plastic cases, which looks like a prison to him. So it's sort of a nightmare vision. He's ended up in toy jail himself in this second volume and starts preaching his own religion almost about this otherworldly collector being and trying to emulate him more closely. Again, I won't go into it too much, but there's sort of religious gangs and sects that spring up in prison are sort of referred to here in a kind of light way.
Wow. Well, I've got to read that story. That's a good one. And one more I want to talk about. I've interviewed Cy Dutton several times, and of course his opposite number, Nick Wilkinson, is in there. And they do a story called Uncanny Valley of the Dolls, which of course is a reference to an old novel, I think, that got turned into a movie a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because Cy comes up with some of the strangest stuff I've ever read, and I like that.
Absolutely. But it's always so brilliant that, for the first volume and this one, I only ever needed to hear the sort of initial two pages. I never needed a full pitch from him. He's always... You know, when he goes to his keyboard, it's going to be utter madness, as you say, kind of out of left field, but it's always brilliant. Mm-hmm. So again, we've got a couple of continuing characters starting to come up in Torso Bear, because this is yet another Snaplock story. Mm-hmm. But this time around, he's sort of coerced by a bad cop in the force to go and do some dirty work for him, track down a ex-forces guy called Triceracop. And so when he's referring to the Valley of the Dolls, we actually get to explore outside of Toyburg, not just to the barren desert-like craft lands outside, but a subterranean place underneath where some bad or broken toys may end up when they're pushed out of toy society. That can be anything you make it for the moment, but he goes on a proper journey to the center of the earth style narrative while sort of going into. There seemed to be this theme of toys like the Ninja Turtles sort of taking place in sewers or kind of like untoward urban places back in the 90s. It references a whole heap of that. We're trying to keep whole tamp on it just to make sure we don't get sued for anything, but it's going to be a lot of fun. Who remembers all those sorts of toys?
Yeah, it's going to be great fun. The whole business sounds really good to me. I love all the other titles too. There's some good stuff. The Law Above, Shooter Shattered, The Dark Stuff, a whole bunch of good things from creators, good people, I'm sure. And so I'm really looking forward to that. So you started on the 2nd of May, of course, Free Comic Book Day. If somebody wants to support you and to participate in this, how do they access your Kickstarter campaign?
Well, they can go to the Kickstarter site and search for Torso Bear, or one word, or just search for torsobear.com online. There'll be links to it from there. What we're running concurrently with the rest of the public's pledges, we're also saying to retailers, because we had a couple that were interested for the last one, if you want to buy in bulk and pledge a certain amount that we'll agree upon, you can get 60% off of the cover price, which is what I believe an awful lot of publishing houses and places, street bookshops pay out for books if they don't have them sale or return. So we're opening it up for everybody this time.
Great. Now, my understanding is it's 125 pages plus. It's expected to show up or be available in August or September of this year.
Yeah. We had originally, last year, intended to go for it in July, but because of the sheer number of great stories and the size we wanted to go for this time, mm-hmm. we wanted to give it a little bit longer just to get everything, make it even better than the last one, and having the time to be able to get that out, as well as the art-based rewards we're offering as well.
Good stuff. And it's full color, too. If you have any questions about that, it's not black and white, unless, that always leaves the door open for possible, like sepia tone or some actually black and white stories in the middle of there, just if it fits the tone of the story. But yeah, full color is going to be something worth having. It's going to be great. Now, the basic pledge package you've listed, digital price is what, £15?
That's certainly for a group. You can get just the book itself, I believe, for £5. Okay. Let me just check that. I've been doing so much promotional stuff over the last couple of days and almost forgot my advert. No, yes, £5 or more, you can get yourself a digital copy of the book, which I believe is about $8. Okay. Is that about it, the exchange rate?
I think so. Yeah, pretty close. So we do that. And of course, a hard copy is a little more, of course, as always.
But... Oh, yeah, absolutely. What we're doing with this, the prices have raised not only because of the size of the book, but also this time we wanted to make sure that we gave our staff a really decent rate. I mean, thinking about all we've heard in the comics press recently about certain DC creators being frozen out of their old sort of profit sharing contracts with regards to characters and things. I just wanted to make sure that we almost sort of wear it on a badge that we might be small, we might be indie, but we'll treat the creators correctly. You know,
that's good.
Maybe the only way to start a cultural thing about treating artists and writers better is to try and start from the bottom. And that's what we're trying to do.
When does the campaign come to an end? What date?
That will be on the 2nd of June.
Very good. Well, one of the nice things about the independent comics is that you guys do get to go and explore and tell stories we haven't heard before. And if the first volume is any indication, the second volume is going to be great as well. So looking forward to that tremendously. Are there other projects that you're working on that we should be aware of, Brett?
There is my regular series, The Veil, that gets published. Well, because of Torso Bear, it was sort of biannually, but it's gone to an annual edition of the comic at the moment. To be honest, it's a lot of fun, but it is very British specific. It's more or less written about my hometown of Aylesbury and quite how we seem to integrate in Britain, everybody that comes along. I mean, I noticed that it obviously happens in the United States, of course, with an awful lot of cultures intermingling. So it's about people who would otherwise be enemies, humans and Cthulhu creatures, otherwise just coming to be in a banal, regular life together, living alongside.
I'm glad you're able to pronounce that, because I look at the word Cthulhu, and I'm always like, Cthulhu, I can't ever figure it out. So I'm glad people like you can tell you can pronounce it correctly. Well, eventually I'll remember.
I'm not entirely sure I'm pronouncing it correctly. So I think it's just, somebody's told me and they've told someone else. But that seems to be sort of a cultural thing as well. It's funny how these things get appropriated and, you know, you can get Cthulhu plushie dolls now.
Very good.
These things sort of almost get diminished and absorbed over time.
Anything else that you're working on? Is that kind of keeping you busy?
This edition is definitely keeping me very busy at the moment. Not only the campaign, but coordinating a lot of the teams to get various bits of artworks done and stuff for the campaign.
I just got one more question. How do you choose people to be in the book? We talked a little bit about David Peterson selecting people that he liked. When you go through and choose people to be in your volumes, how do you decide them? Are they people you know, you're exposed to? Do you approach them? Or is there like a variety of ways that these all things happen?
Oh, yeah, there are definitely a variety of ways these things mix up. Sometimes it can be a bit of both. Back in 2011, I was at a Bristol comic convention, and just two tables down from Cy himself, we never got to talking, but when I put up on Digital Webbing and Whitechapel about a year ago looking for writers for the first Torso Bear, we sort of got talking kind of over that and over the fact we were both in the same convention space. But then completely out of the blue comes writers like Jake Young, who I believe was told about the post on an online job board about it and just came through. Other people like Gronje and John Scribbins I've known from my local area, from the shop. So it's whoever ends up there. What strikes me as amazing is how differently you come to meet those people, how different they are. But it all seemed to kind of like get on this flagship idea of the Toy City, and they all sort of innately understand it despite their background.
Well, I want to wrap up by talking about a couple of reviews that came on. They say some funny and wonderful stuff. They said that Torso Bear Volume 1 reads like Raymond Chandler meets Teddy Ruxpin with a generous dose of Robert Crumb. Now, how strange is that? That's great stuff.
That is. I mean, moreover, I can kind of get the Robert Crumb stuff from the art, definitely, and maybe sort of some of the way the characters float across the page, but the subject matter is totally unlike, I think, anything Crumb ever put out. I'm really flattered by the whole Raymond Chandler meets Teddy Ruxpin thing, because I grew up watching or having Teddy Ruxpin be a part of the toy lexicon. And Raymond Chandler is a far superior writer than I. Oh. If anything, I was only trying to really simply ape his voice, as it were, to give that sort of noir flavour to the storybook tone. Is it a matter of interest? It's amazing quite how many of the writers occasionally need a little bit of coaching when it comes to talking or narrating for these books in that storybook voice. Mm-hmm. Sort of brings out how difficult it actually is to write books for children.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also like the phrase. It's called a more disturbing and adult Hanna-Barbera piece. And, you know, because I grew up on Hanna-Barbera, just like you're talking about Teddy Ruxpin, I grew up on Hanna-Barbera with Birdman and Mike Torr and all these things. And, you know, I can see that, yeah, that would be a very different kind of Hanna-Barbera cartoon if these were in there.
So it definitely would. I think Hanna-Barbera and Byra, they would both be horrified at that notion. But yeah, actually, it's funny how these things turn up again. You used to mention Birdman, and then years later, Time Warner, but a couple of writers have a bit of fun with it, with Harvey Birdman, where he becomes a lawyer and starts doing espionage and sort of malpractice cases and things. So that idea of taking and giving a slightly adult spin on old properties, I suppose it's not exactly a new idea. Being part of the sort of evolution of an idea as people grow up with it, maybe.
Well, it still works. And the last one, which I really like, there are a few comics out there as innocently decadent as this one. I like that. That's a great way to describe it. I think that's wonderful.
Again, I'm just blown away by all the reaction. It's wonderful, but given everybody's work to get that kind of thing. But innocently decadent is it totally sideswiped me. We haven't been going for decadent, but I suppose it kind of is. It is kind of it is like a nasty chocolate treat. You don't want to have them too often.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Brett, I wish you much success. I hope this all works out extremely well and, you know, gets fully funded and then some, and maybe get some stretch goals involved with it. And we'll get to see the Torso Bear Volume 2 come out before too very long. It's great stuff. Not only are you writing and producing great stories, but you're coordinating other writers and producers to make great stuff. So the Torso Bear series is a really successful, I think. If you want to show people what comics can be like, this is the way to do it. So,
that's really kind of you to say.
Doing very well, and hopefully we get to talk with you again when it's time for Torso Bear Volume 3 to start coming out, because great stuff, and I wish you a lot of success.
We have got that written. There is an ending to the whole thing written, so it's sort of a trilogy, as roughly planned as it is at the moment, so you're not wrong.
Oh, so 3 would be the ending? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, okay, totally. We've got a whole thing mapped out more or less.
Okay, well, I didn't know that. That's going to be something. In a way, I'll be sad to read the end, because this is kind of fun to have this kind of an interesting universe to
explore. Well, it's the end of Ruxpin's story. It's not necessarily the end of the story of the city.
Ah, okay. I love good tease. I just think that's the greatest thing. So you're doing great, Brett. Keep it up, and man, we will get out there and support your book, and we'll get to talk with you again, I'm sure, because this is great stuff.
Absolutely. I look forward to hearing your other shows and the other interviews you've got lined up for today. You are a very busy man.
Well, thanks.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be sure to be back next time when I'll have another great interview with yet another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.